Hello, and welcome to the School of Serenity. We are being broadcast here by 4MTV, which is a mental health initiative in North America, and also Walk to Serenity. And these two platforms are offering wisdom about modern mental health and mindfulness. I am your host, Kara Keem. I am an intuitive therapist, a Reiki master, and I am also an author. And I have written a book, Discovering My Wings, about how my life transformed when I started listening to the voice of my intuition. I have a private practice working with women to help empower them through accessing their own intuition and their inner guidance. And I'm very excited for our guest today. Please welcome Becca Odom. She is a licensed clinical social worker and registered yoga teacher. She has over a decade of experience in the field of social work. Becca specializes in combining somatic approaches with EMDR for trauma recovery. She primarily works with women who have experienced trauma, chronic stress, and anxiety. And her passion is to help women work through trauma, anxiety, and stress management. And we are so excited to have you here today. Thank you for joining us, Becca.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I've been looking forward
to it. Yeah, we used to share office space together. Mm-hmm. In Asheville, when we were both practicing there.
That's right. Way back in the day. Full circle.
Back in the day. Yes. And now we've both moved on to new locations, but it was fun to get my practice started in that space with you. Yeah. And then just through knowing you and learning about you and following you, realize that we are both highly sensitive people.
That's right. That's right. And then we work with really highly sensitive people. So it's really beautiful place to merge and meet. So I'm glad to be here.
Yes. And both being highly sensitive people and having private practices that focus on highly sensitive people, I'm excited about this topic today, creating that sense of safety. So can you tell us about your journey as a highly sensitive person and how that's really shaped your practice and what you do?
Absolutely. So I really believe that language is power. Like when we have the language to speak about things, it takes the shame out of it. It gives us a path forward. And I wish I had this language of a highly sensitive person growing up. Because I just lived my whole life being really overstimulated and really sensitive to things, but not understanding what was happening. And so the first time I ever heard that term, highly sensitive person, it was like a light bulb went off, right?
Just
clicked. I feel like I had a framework to advocate for myself. Yes. And then I started, learning tools to really manage it. And so it's been a journey and really finding yoga and mindfulness when I was around 16 or 17. It was just the first time that I found a way to try to shift from the inside out, how I was navigating the world, the input I was getting from the world. It just gave me a toolbox to be able to manage in a different way. And so it's been a really beautiful journey as we all unfold. And for me, what I love is that no matter what happens or what life transition I'm going through, child's pose is the same, right? Like my yoga practice is my home base that I get to come back to. And I love having that framework. And so I've been really passionate just to try to bring these tools and this framework to more people, because I think the sooner we can get it, the less suffering we can avoid and the more we can really build that resiliency to navigate the waters of the world.
Absolutely. Yes. And just having that term, highly sensitive person, was life-changing for me. Mm-hmm. I was just telling you before the show started, I think I lived my entire youth outside of my resiliency zone, really in this hypervigilant state, because my nervous system was constantly fried. And I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what. And I thought I had all these mental health problems. So just knowing that term was life-changing for me.
Absolutely. Right. When we have the language, we then can advocate for what we need. And so, instead of just being told to calm down, it's like, oh, I'm learning how to actually do that and manage the intensity of this, overstimulating world that we live in.
Right.
So it's really empowering.
Yes. And you found yoga when you were 16?
Yeah. And my best friend growing up, her mom, it was just like a bonus mom to me. And she gave me my first video when I was 16. And it was they were practicing in the desert. And the 16-year-old self was like, what is this? And then it took a couple years to be like, okay, I'm going to keep putting toes in. And then in college, there was a free yoga class at the rec center. And so I started taking that. And I'll never forget this one class that I walked out of. And I just felt such a deep shift in my nervous system. I didn't have that language yet either, but I felt a shift, right? And mm-hmm. I was sort of being blown away that all I had done was go to a 60-minute yoga class, but I could feel so significantly different. And so that class in particular, really just, it turned a corner for me. And I was like, I got to find out more about this.
Right.
Yeah. Then I started practicing and using it with my clients and got certified when I moved to Asheville. And it just, this beautiful snowballing of really building into a whole career, but really it started because I needed it, you know, and it made me feel so much better. And I was like, okay, now I'm gonna offer this to the world.
Yes. Yes. And you probably felt safe leaving that class. Did you have that sense of safety?
Like deep safety in a way that I don't think I'd ever experienced before because I never really learned how to, right? I didn't know what was going on, why I was so dysregulated. And so it was one of the first times I felt that, you know, from the inside out, no one created it for me. Like I felt safe and stable within my body because of what I did for myself in that class.
Yes. Oh, how powerful. How powerful. And now you are able to really help your clients with that. So tell us about the work in creating safety in the world for your clients who are highly sensitive, because it's so hard to feel safe when we are dysregulated. Absolutely. I mean, we don't feel safe.
Yeah. It's a journey to get there, right? So most of my folks that I work with are highly sensitive people, and I specialize in anxiety and trauma and stress management. And so what I really do with people is help them create that sense of safety in a few different domains. And so for me, what we have to start with is within our body. And so finding tools that are going to help us to feel more regulated, more able to show up and feel empowered and embodied. And so the main thing I'm doing with folks when I'm starting with them is really skill building. So finding, is it breath work practices? Is it a yoga practice? Are there meditations we need to be doing so that we can start to build this sense of resilience in our body, working with the vagus nerve and the nervous system. And so just this whole skill set in the body is, to me, the foundation. And then from that sense of safety, right, then how I'm supporting my clients and finding ways to create a sense of safety in their relationships. So finding their voice. Mostly I work with individuals who identify as women. So helping women find their voice in their relationships and advocate for themselves and set boundaries in this embodied way where we can keep our lids on, right? And we can feel really regulated and grounded as we're creating these changes. And so I get so excited to see these kind of ripple out into the world, into our relationships, and then our environment, right? How do we feel safe in an environment and in a world where we are being bombarded by sensory input, right? So
yes.
Yeah, which is so key. And so helping people figure out like, what do they need in their actual home space, right? Is it different lighting, making sure we're warm enough? How do our clothes feel in our body? Mm-hmm. Are we fed? Yes. So really kind of getting oriented to the space we're in to make sure that that's not also overstimulating us. Cause I think that's a big piece too. When I'm working with folks is how do we decompress as highly sensitive people at the end of the day, after taking in a lot of input from the people we're around and the world that we're in.
Yes, there is so much input. And I noticed I was the school worker for 7 years. And then I also worked in the emergency room at the hospital, and just the lights and the kids and the noise and the chaos and all of the stimulation. I loved these jobs. And ultimately my nervous system wasn't able to tolerate the stimulation that I was in. And so I'm sitting here thinking, as we're talking, we know what highly sensitive people are because we are them, but let's share with our viewers who might not know, what is a highly sensitive person, and how that just dawned on me, just sharing with the audience what that even means, because it might be a new term for some people.
Right. And a big thing that I think of, and I know you'll have probably pieces to add too, a big thing that I think of with highly sensitive people is how we can get overstimulated by sensory input. So that's one of the big indications, right? So bright lights. And what I have found, at least for myself and the people I work with, is often there's a few different sensory input spots, right, that tend to be a little more sensitive or easily triggered. And so it could be lighting, it might be coarse fabrics, loud noises, getting really impacted by our quality of sleep, getting hangry, right? So these different ways that we can get dysregulated because we have a more sensitive nervous system. And again, we're living in this kind of world. And so I think the more stimulation we're bringing into the world or getting from the world, I think the more we're noticing how many of us are actually highly sensitive and yes. needing to navigate through.
Yep. And my understanding also is that highly sensitive people are born with more mirror neurons. Mm-hmm. This is from Elaine Aaron's research. And so mirror neurons are what allow you to really experience something. And so if we have more of those, every experience is heightened. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we really feel the joy because we've got those extra mirror neurons, but we really feel the sadness. And I've noticed that a lot of people come to me being very misdiagnosed. You know, mm-hmm. they're somewhere on the spectrum or even bipolar, because when your nervous system is really overstimulated, it can feel a little manicky and then you crash out. Mm-hmm. And so it's really all about we have this brain structure. There are more mirror neurons. We don't need to change it. We need to work with the nervous system to constantly soothe it and give it what it needs to regulate itself.
Absolutely. And I've really started to reframe this in my mind through this work of, it's like, I feel like being highly sensitive is like a superpower, right? If we can craft it, right? Because yes, we will get overstimulated by a bright fluorescent light that's vibrating, but I will also feel the sunset in my body, right? Like I will also like experience the awe of the world in my body. And so I really try to help reframe that for clients that I'm working with of like, if we're sensitive enough to pick up this stuff, we are sensitive enough to move it and to release it. We just need to and digest it through. We just need the tools to be able to do that.
1,000%. Absolutely. And I love that you say that, because I say that too. I have all my clients take the highly sensitive person test. Yes. When I first meet with them, and I don't know, every single one of them happens to score as a highly sensitive person. And I always say, this is a superpower. Mm-hmm. It can be very uncomfortable if we are not regulating the nervous system, but it is absolutely a superpower because the joy is so beautiful. The sunset is so deep. I mean, those moments of life are so, so rich for highly sensitive people.
Yeah. And then I'm finding that, you know, the more we intentionally help to train our brain to focus on the positive or neutral things around us, the more we keep experiencing more of those positive experiences in our body, right? Because our brain's wired to focus for the negative and look for it. And so we have to kind of counter that piece. And so I found a lot of, I feel like EMDR is really helpful for that kind of piece, because it's really intentionally targeting where the brain is focusing on and then resourcing to build that up.
Absolutely. Yes. So tell us, because you do provide EMDR, you've done in the past equine therapy, yoga for trauma resilience. Can you tell us about these models and their benefits? Because those I do think are so, so powerful for helping regulate the nervous system. I mean, I personally receive EMDR. I think it's life-changing.
That's why I got trained in it. I received it like 8 years ago, and it just forever changed my life. And I was like, I have to be able to offer this.
Yes.
I've come into all these specialties, right? As I experience something or heal something, and then I just feel called to then carry that forward, like bring a purpose to that experience. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I find EMDR, yoga, equine therapy, they're all kind of a backdoor into therapy. Mm-hmm. And I really love that, because I think sometimes, especially for folks who've been through therapy for a long period of time, that when we're just experiencing talk therapy, we can sometimes start to hit a wall. And so I really love bringing these alternative approaches in. Mm-hmm. And they all have components of a bottom-up approach to healing, right? Mm-hmm. And so really shifting our physiology so that we can have some more capacity to heal. And so in this work, I find that I'm teaching people skills in the beginning to work with their nervous system, have that foundation. I was just talking to another colleague this morning about EMDR and our personal journeys with it, and having tools before we actually did EMDR versus just kind of diving in. And those are very different experiences. And so, so it's a different way to kind of have that foundation in the body and then work on kind of reprocessing or refiling the memories that we've gone through after we have this sense of safety in the body, so that we can then refile those charges. So basically taking that emotional trigger around a memory, EMDR helps us file it into a factual part of the brain, because what we've been through will always be a fact, but the trigger and the floods, those shift. And then we start to work with belief systems, right? So being able to start to shift this belief about ourselves and the world, so that we can carry that new perspective or lens. I love all of that. And I just believe in it so much.
Mm-hmm. I do too. And I'm even receiving EMDR remote now. across, she'll take her fingers and go across the screen and it is still effective. I mean, I'm still receiving the benefits. How do you work with EMDR? Do you do the fingers or the buzzers or?
I do. Well, when I was in person, I would do my hand moving back and forth, or I had the buzzers, and I've been virtual with folks since the beginning of the pandemic. So we're coming on almost 2 years. And so for most people now I'm doing self-tapping.
Oh, wow.
In different ways to create that bilateral in their body. And then for some people I do that and my hand moving across the screen, but I found for a lot of folks, the self-tapping in different speeds and the eyes closed, so we have that kind of blank screen of the eyelids is more than enough to be effective, to help things be moving and in the comfort of their own home, which is just so sweet to have somebody beside them as they're in therapy and doing their healing.
Yeah, I didn't even realize you could do the tapping for EMDR. I was not aware of that. I mean, it makes perfect sense now that we're talking about it. Yeah. I actually worked in the emergency room at Mission Hospital in Asheville, and I did a training, and one of the trainers said, just walk through that emergency room doing this. No one's going to notice. It's so chaotic in there. No one's going to think anything of it. Just start tapping. And you can do the butterfly one where you go under, which is a little less obvious, and that really anytime there's the bilateral, you're really signaling to the nervous system to rock and soothe itself. So that's interesting, because I have been, you know, I'm very aware of tapping, but I did not realize that could play into EMDR.
Yeah, completely. And the different ways of tapping in different speeds. So it's been really beautiful to watch the pivot onto the virtual platform. And there's apps and stuff too, but I find for most people the tapping and then sometimes the eyes is enough stimulation to help the brain reprocess.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Wow. And I am finding that the virtual platform is really, really powerful. I've kept all of my clients for the 2 years and all remote. Mm-hmm. And it is nice. I prefer receiving therapy in my own home, actually. It's been very beneficial for me. And so I'm finding that it is for most of my clients also. There are a few who prefer in person, which I completely understand. But it's interesting that many therapists have been able to do things like EMDR through this virtual platform.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I find as a highly sensitive person holding space, I find honestly the virtual is a little bit easier for me personally, kind of holding space, not taking it on, managing my own energy in a different way. So in that way, I think it actually helps me as a highly sensitive space holder to be able to do that in a way that really works and hold that.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. And I just love your newsletter and everything that you share through your newsletter. And you do share tips for helping people sort of and sort of sneaky self-care tips. And one that I got from you that I've been doing regularly is the ocean breathing.
Oh, I love the ocean breath so much.
Yes. So.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. I love getting to share like sneaky self-care. Nothing brings me more joy, I think, than teaching people sneaky self-care, especially as highly sensitive people, because no one else has to know, right, that we're feeling a certain way or that we're doing a tool. It's really about our system knowing that we're doing something intentionally. Like that's the shift, right? That's that sense of safety. We recognize there's a need. We can do something subtle to help our nervous system feel calmer and more safe. And then that helps us kind of continue to show up without having to say anything to anybody about that we're actually doing a tool in this moment.
Right. It's like when they told me to walk around the emergency room just tapping, you know, those moments of sneaky self-care. It's like no one has to know what's going on, or you can go more subtly down by your waist. But those are those moments where we're working with our nervous system. We know we're overstimulated and we can work to regulate it then instead of what I used to do is go home and I was so dysregulated and so far out of my resiliency zone. I felt like I just needed to sit in the corner and rock for 3 hours.
Yes, absolutely. So this kind of maintenance, like I think about our world as like a pressure cooker, right? And so this self-care things, it's just taking letting some of the steam out, right? And so if we can let some of the steam out and these little moments throughout the day, it's really going to build into something big.
Right.
I've been reading the book Atomic Habits by James Clear, and he's talking about these small little shifts that we can do. And I think about sneaky self-care is that same way, is Of course, it would be nice if we all had an hour and a half to roll out our yoga mats or go to a studio every day. But really, if we have these small things we can do in every day and in these transitions, like the ocean breathing, which is just creating that ocean-like sound in the back of the throat, like we're trying to snore or whisper, it's stimulating our vagus nerve, right? It's helping to calm our nervous system down. And it's just so subtle, but it's that vibration of the breath. And then if we can start to extend our exhales a little bit longer than the inhales, it's like pressing on the brake of our nervous system. It's going to help to calm things down and slow things down so that we can attune to what we need before we are totally burned out and in that corner of the closet, just rocking. To attune to it sooner.
At that point, it's like you're so far gone out of the self-regulation that you had to spend, I had to spend hours getting myself back. But if I do the sneaky self-care when I start to hit the top of the zone, I'm like, I'm edging out of it. Cause for me, I go into hyper arousal. You could go up in hyper or down in hypo. Mine's definitely the hyper. If I can do it as I'm hitting the top of the zone, that's the time instead of when I'm already so far out that now getting back in is going to be, I feel like an eternity of self-care.
Yeah. You know? And I think I often talk to folks about like before we go into something. So before I go into that meeting or a presentation or something that I know is going to up my stress level a little bit, like what can we do before we even go in to bring it down more? So that when it bumps it up, right, I'm not that close to my edge yet, right? So what can I do to like kind of proactively? And I think, you know, even like shaking and bouncing is one of my favorite ones. And I can't tell you how many people, you know, just shake out their hands for a second, go into the bathroom and do a little shake and bounce, but just letting the body move in that way so it gets the message. Because our body only speaks body language is the phrase that I say 10 times every day to everybody.
Yes.
We can't rationalize this down, right? Our body doesn't know what we're saying. It just knows it's getting, and we're wired to survive. And so speaking body language so that my body knows if I'm closing my eyes and taking 5 deep breaths, odds are there is not a mountain lion, right? If there was, I would not be doing this, closing my eyes, taking deep breaths. So it's a way to send that signal to the brain. Like we're safe. Like, we are safe in this moment.
We are. Exactly. And I was doing grounding before the show. I love these shows and they're stimulating for me, even though I love them. And so I was doing grounding and I will have to get off and go ground myself after this.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Yeah. I have a little like weighted thing in my lap, right? Like I have around me that's sensory, right? That's another thing I love is like putting things in my pocket that I can just feel the texture of a little pebble in my pocket. Right. But that's the way for me to kind of focus and redirect my attention so I can feel calmer even in this moment. And then, the aftercare of what we do to bring it back down is important.
Yes. And I love that because it's easy to just in this world, in this culture, rush from this to the next to the next. And I, especially many of us, don't take time to pause.
Yeah.
And to take those breaks.
Right.
And so I love that idea of really regulating before you go into the stimulating environment.
Because if we don't, our body's just going to keep turning up the volume, right? Until we listen, like it's just going to keep getting louder, the signals until we really take the time to care for it. So the little bits, little moments, little drops in the bucket. I think that's everything.
Yeah, it is. It is. And so what do you do for your practice? I'm so curious. How do you do this throughout the day? What are your favorites?
I love that. It's a great question. So in between my clients, so before I do anything, I do a little yoga practice in the morning, just something to move my body, even if it's just for a few minutes, a little bit of breath work, a little bit of meditation if I can. And then in between my clients, I always do some movement. So I'll stand and I'll bounce and I'll shake. I'll go rinse my hands. I will stand outside in the sun. Or right now, when it's really cold outside, I stand in the window in the sun and try to
Up.
But I move out of the room, right? When I'm done with the day, I intentionally change what I'm wearing or I switch which like wrist I have my bracelet on because I can't write. I try to do like something that signals to my body like, okay, we're in a different gear now.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I have not even thought of these things. That's fascinating.
Yeah. I really love that practice. I just think it's a helpful kind of ritual for me to, and again, the sensory thing, I can't write with my notes when I have like my beaded bracelets on that hand. So if I switch it over, it's a way for my body to kind of know like, okay, we're in a different mode. I have a different hat on now. Mm-hmm. So those are some of my favorites, kind of sweeping it off, shaking it off.
Yes.
Yes. After a big day, sometimes I'll just literally lay on the floor and close my eyes and just breathe for as long as I need to, right? But that's decompression, right?
Absolutely. I just yesterday, there are woods out in the back of my house or where I'm living, and I just went out and I just laid in the ground, and it was muddy and wet and yucky, and I did not care. I was like, I just need to be in the earth. Earthing is a big one. You know, walking around barefoot, just through the earth, very intentionally, just laying in the ground. That for me, I'm having all this post-COVID ick and inflammation has been a big one for just reconnecting my body.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Self-massage is also really healing. Like I love like a little head rub or ear rub, or I've been really focusing in on like the vagus nerve massage lately in the ears and the neck.
Oh, tell me about the vagus nerve massage.
So I added, there's a video I have on my YouTube channel now to practice it. And so it's, you basically, there's a couple of points in the ear that you can target. And so one is the flap in front of the ear. And one is in the middle of the ear. It's called the concha. It's like a conch shell. It's like in the center.
Yeah.
And so for some people, they like massaging both. For some people, they just like one spot or the other. Massage those and kind of circle them, because the vagus is going from the, you know, from the brainstem. There's these receptors all over the body, but there's a collection in the ears, and then it's going down the neck. So the massage is, you know, from the ears and then going down that area of the neck, kind of above the sternum. And so it's just a way to stimulate it on the receptors on this physical level. And it might just look like I'm playing with my earring, right? But like right. I'm here doing a little vagus resourcing.
Yes, I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. That is sneaky. That's what I mean.
Yep. Or sort of just like massaging my hand or again, the head, the feet. But I find touch is really, because I'm, again, sensitive to the sensory input. So if I can have safe touch, especially for myself, then it's a way to feel really resourced just in that moment and not have to go.
Yes. And that's a good way to just, because I'm, touch is my love language. And I think when you are sensitive, touch feels really nourishing. It feels really good. Mm-hmm. And so I love, as you're talking, I'm realizing I'd love to learn more about pressure points and what pressure points would help different areas. And you ever work with that, with pressure points?
I do some. So acupressure is something that I've been really close to my own personal healing journey. And so I love bringing some acupressure pieces into it. And again, it's so much about the sense of we're caring for ourselves, whatever the point is, right, or what we're doing. It's that like I'm tuning into what my body's needing, and then I'm caring for it and whatever it's asking for, whether that's movement or pressure or temperature, holding something warmer, holding something colder. So saying like what that part of the body need in that moment.
Yeah.
So really empowering.
Yeah. Are there some points you could point out to us, like acupressure points? What are some that are good to learn about? I just don't know anything about them.
Yeah. So interestingly, there's actually that point of the concha. So I love when things overlap. So I feel like the way I see the world and healing is like at the eye doctor, right? Where there's like all these lenses that come in, and it's like, and so it's beautiful when they overlap. I was talking to my acupuncturist about the vagus massage and that inner point in the ear. And she was saying how that's like one of the foundational points in the ear for acupuncture. So that concha, that like center part of the ear, is one acupressure point that you can be pressing that is acupressure, but also a vagus nerve massage, right? For some people, it's that little in the middle of that soft tissue in between the thumb and the index finger is another acupressure point that we can press on. And another one of my favorites is on the feet, which I have shoes on at the moment, but the inner part of the arch, like the very center of the arch. So doing a little foot massage, that's a kidney point. So all these can be helpful to ground, to feel a little bit more calmer and resourced. And that pressure can help to, again, bottom up, send that message, basically. I wouldn't be pressing on this point of my foot right? And taking these breaths if there really was a threat. So it's a way to kind of override and help us know, okay, there might be stress, but we actually are safe in this moment.
We're safe. We're safe. So all of these little tips help us create that sense of safety.
Yes.
That internal sense of safety, because, you know, as we were talking about with our producer earlier, there is so much going on in the world, and there's a lot with, you know, that's just started happening in the world, and a pandemic, and, you know, wars. And so there are real threats in the world, and it's scary. And if we can just take a few moments to wiggle these points or breathe or to create that internal sense of safety that's within us, even though the world seems like there's a very threatening place right now.
Absolutely. Right. Cause if we can put our lids on to talk like brain science, right? If we can put our lids on through these, we're going to make more rational decisions. We're going to be able to assess like what is our part in whatever piece that's happening in the world that we feel called to move towards or address or help. We will be able to make a more informed decision if we're coming at it from a calmer state with our brain fully functioning and regulated. We're gonna actually be able to do more good than if we are in this emotional state trying to just save the world and we are carrying the pain of the world. The decisions we're gonna make are just gonna be a lot from a different place. And so I think when we feel that calling, coming back to ourselves first, right? So we could then move forward more intentionally and not be burned out. Because again, if we're burned out, we're not going to be able to do as much good.
That's such a good point. That's such a good point, because spreading love in the world, helping, you know, people through our personal calling in the world, we do need to be regulated, and our nervous system does need to be soothed to do that.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's become one of my biggest passions over the last couple of years, is helping therapists and just space holders manage burnout, because it's real. And so really, what do we need to do to bring it back here before we offer it to other people and keep trying to show up?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's true. I'm actually probably taking a month off of just seeing clients because I worked myself into burnout and then wasn't doing the sneaky self-care tips. And so it's just amazing how what we are working on ourselves for myself is what I'm teaching others. And so this is just all such a good reminder for me in the state that I am post-COVID and recovery, that, you know, our body does need this self-love and these moments of restoration, how important it is.
Yeah. And that we deal with stress every day, right? So the other book I've been geeking out about is Burnout. And they're talking about what we deal with stress every single day. We need to do something to help the stress cycle complete every day. At least 20 minutes every day, right? Even if it's just these sections of small things that we're doing throughout the day, but really helping our stress cycle complete so that we don't get burned out, so that we don't get that volume turned up so loud in our body that we aren't able to function in the way that we want to be able to.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I love it. Becca, thank you. I just loved talking about all of this, and thank you for sharing your tips. How can people find you? Because you do have these amazing newsletters, and I read them and I use the tips, and I'd love for the audience to be able to tune in to what you're up to and learn more about your care tips that you put in your newsletters.
Absolutely. Yeah. So people can find me at BeccaOdomWellness.com, and I'm on Instagram and Facebook, and so you can find my newsletter link through any of those, and I'll send them out just about once a week. I send out some tips and some videos and just free resources for people to build resilience. And then I have online classes and courses and stuff for therapists and people to, again, have better self-care, manage burnout, all of that.
Yes. Okay. I need to sign up for some of your classes. Yes. Oh. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's really been such a treat for me.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I've loved reconnecting. So cheers to helping us all learn how to soothe our nervous system, especially highly sensitive people. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.